These buildings have press offices. It is an attempt to prevent the picture and what is going on. It is completely against the international law and the international human rights law.
Israel has ramped up its military aggression to include artillery and tank fire. The escalation has fed fears of a return to a long-term war between Israeli regime and Palestinian groups.
The previous nights were extremely horrible in all parts of the Gaza Strip, from the north to the south. We appreciate the significant role of our resistance front in defending us. This is all for Jerusalem al-Quds, and we won't give up.
This is a violation of the international law, and Israel should be held accountable to all these crimes. We are civilians, and Israel continues to target residential areas. Children are the main victims of these attacks.
Israeli warplanes struck multiple targets in Gaza overnight, while Palestinian resistance in response fired rockets into occupied lands by Israel. Observers here say that the main victims of these inhumane attacks against the Gaza Strip are civilians. Palestinians call on the international community to hold Israel accountable for this violation of international law. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Over 100,000 Londoners took to the streets of the British capital, London, denouncing the Israeli war crimes currently being committed and in remembrance of the Nakba Day, on which Palestinians remember the ethnic cleansing of 800,000 Palestinians from their lands by Zionist terrorists. The demonstrators marched on London's Israeli embassy, beginning from Marble Arch a mile away, gathering more demonstrators as they began to reach their final destination.
The streets of London taken over by pro-Palestine demonstrators, outraged at the massacres being committed in the Gaza Strip and Israel's crimes committed at Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan, and calling on their government to end all its support for what they call an apartheid regime.
Before, Israel used to attack parts of Gaza. Now they're attacking the whole of Gaza, and there's no way for them to hide.
It's now regarded by some people that you can't actually criticize Israel, that you can't call it apartheid. What I'm hoping is that after the appalling events in Gaza, which are taking place as we speak, that the size of this demonstration and hopefully many other demonstrations throughout the world will turn that round. It really needs to be understood how desperate the situations of the Palestinians is.
Demonstrations also took place throughout the country, with strong sentiment being voiced against the complicity of the UK's government in Israeli attacks on innocent Palestinian civilians.
We need to stop the oppression in Palestine. We need to stop the violence that's happening, killing so many innocent people. We need to stop. We need to give all the Palestinians their right.
The British government should listen to the Palestinians and think about what is right and what is wrong. An ethnic cleansing is wrong. And it's very clear now that that is what the Israelis want to do with the Palestinians. They are trying to drive them off their land so as to expand Israel.
Despite Israel's attempts to justify its violence, world public opinion, and specifically UK public opinion, seems to be shifting in favor of the Palestinian people and against Israel's war crimes. Robert Inlakesh, London.
Israel murderer, France complicit. That's the main slogan shouted by thousands of mainly young people in a march around Barbès, the popular north of Paris. The protesters voiced their anger over the crimes committed by Israel against the Palestinian people. The violation of the Al-Aqsa compound by Jewish settlers, the ethnic cleansing in Sheikh Jarrah, and the bombing of civilians in Gaza. And to make things worse, the march has been officially banned by the French authorities because of fear of public disorder. The police officers confiscated the banners for Palestine.
The attitude of the French government is in the straight line of what it has always been, a colonial attitude. That's not surprising for us, except that the Palestinians are demanding the international community, thus also France, to denounce the war crimes of Israel, which are crimes against international law. So France is complicit to the colonial policy of annexation, of apartheid, and the criminal Israeli state.
The protesters challenged the ban of the French government in a pacific way. The only violence used was by police forces throwing tear gas grenades and using water cannons. The French authorities faced all imaginable difficulties to disperse the demonstrators because in this popular area of Paris, people came out of their houses to support the protests.
This march is banned because they say it could drain a lot of people from migrant neighborhoods. This is the pinnacle of a racist argument. It's a discriminatory and racist measure that harms fundamental rights in an incredible way.
In a press conference before the banned march, organizers denounced the ban and said they were willing to organize a common security force with the police to make sure the march could take place in secured conditions. But the French authorities refused.
The interior minister has made an amalgam with an anti-Semitic march. These are arguments to prevent the solidarity with the struggle of the Palestinian people. France always supports the colonial policy of Israel, while they should support the application of international law.
This year, the commemoration of the Nakba, the catastrophe, has coincided with a renewal of the uprising of the Palestinian people. Despite the ban in Paris, Palestinians can count on a lot of solidarity from France and the world. The protesters demand the end of Israeli's attack against Palestinian people. They also blame the authoritarian drift of the French government. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
On Saturday, thousands of people flooded Piazza dell'Esquilino, a square in the heart of the Italian capital, to voice their support for Palestinians facing relentless lethal bombing campaigns by the Israeli military over the past days. The initiative, dubbed Save Jerusalem Al-Quds from Ethnic Cleansing, was called by a number of Palestinian associations based in Italy. Demonstrators were holding up Palestinian flags, chanting Free Palestine and Stop the Killing in Gaza.
Injustice cannot last forever. The latest act of violent aggression carried out by Israeli armed forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque was a premeditated provocation. But look at the people here and the demonstrations everywhere in the world. They are finally opening their eyes.
We are dealing with brutal violation of Palestinians' rights, evictions, deportations. All this is unacceptable. The international community, the EU, must intervene now.
Tel Aviv's relentless aerial bombardment of Gaza has so far killed dozens of Palestinians and injured hundreds of others.
At the protest, representatives of anti-war and humanitarian groups are accusing Tel Aviv of using abusive and wanton force against largely peaceful Palestinian protesters. Many fear that the tensions in Jerusalem or Quds will reverberate throughout the region.
Questa notte, Israele.
In Lebanon, a young man from the Palestinian refugee camps was killed last night on the border with Israel. The situation is becoming incendiary there.
We live in an upside-down world where the victims are attacked in front of the indifference of the international community. I think it's time to issue sanctions against Israel to stop the massacre of civilians.
Meanwhile, in the port of Livorno, in central North Italy, workers have refused to load a shipment of arms after discovering the load was headed to Israel. Unions have said the move was in support of the Palestinians. Max Civili, Rome.
More Palestinians have been killed and hundreds others have been wounded in a fresh Israeli crackdown on the occupied West Bank. The crackdown came in several areas after Palestinians held rallies to denounce Israel's massacres in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Gaza is under bombing. All Palestinians must take part in the protests and go to the military checkpoints. If we stay at our homes, nothing will change. We must fight those Israeli occupying soldiers wherever they are. We are all in one tunnel, all Palestinians who live in the lands that were occupied in 1948, in Al-Quds, in the West Bank, and in Gaza. We are today fighting, by different means, the Israeli occupation. Innocent people and children are being killed in cold blood. The least to do is to protest.
In occupied Ramallah, hundreds of Palestinians intensified their participation in the ongoing anti-Israel protests. Following Friday prayers, people from all walks of life and from different political affiliation marched toward the Beit El military checkpoint located outside the city. Palestinian activists taking part in the protest said the crimes and violence by the Israeli forces require a serious reaction.
Our battle is won. We are all today united in defense of Al-Quds. The Israeli occupation is the enemy of the Palestinian people, wherever they are. After all these years, the Palestinians in the land occupied in 1948 are sending a message to the occupying regime that nothing succeeded to let them forget their historical rights, change their culture and identity.
Israeli forces' violence has also seen a spike in the Palestinian cities occupied in 1948, like Lod, Akka, and Haifa, including attacks by Israeli settlers and destruction of Palestinian property and the burning of mosques, amid the Israeli regime's fears the conflict could even spread.
Protests against Israel's full-scale war on the besieged Gaza Strip have spiraled rapidly all over the occupied territories. Palestinians say a new uprising against Israel is in the making here in the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and definitely will reach the lands occupied in 1948. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The wrongful detainment, deportation, and denial of legal rights predominantly affecting Britain's Caribbean communities, known as the Windrush scandal, first made headlines several years ago, mostly impacting the generations who had legally migrated to the UK between the late 1940s and early 1970s. Despite government promises to tackle the problem, many more in Britain's black communities continue to be traumatised by government policies, which critics characterise as racist, and which were recently slammed in a High Court ruling, which suggested that Home Office rules impacting those affected by the scandal were irrational and in some cases had even led to the unlawful denial of British citizenship.
What it shows you is that this government has put tripwires at every stage of this application process in order to weed out and disqualify people who suffered enormously, but they needed an administrative excuse in order to deny them compensation. And that the High Court has ruled against the government is a huge disgrace for this government. But they won't be feeling any shame, because this government and Boris Johnson and Priti Patel in particular seem to take great glee and delight in revelling in racism.
Other Windrush victims are still fighting to get any justice or government support, with one even saying that they had had more support from the local supermarket than the Home Office.
We've had ruthless deportations of Jamaicans who committed no crime other than parking fine and lived here for 20, 30 years, got their families here. All the evidence shows us that when it comes to British immigration policy, it is ruthlessly targeted on the non-white, the African and Muslim and Asian communities. And of that, I don't think there can be any doubt.
The Windrush scandal, which first made headlines several years ago, continues with more deportations likely planned in the near future, with the government remaining squarely in the spotlight with thousands of people demanding action.
The Windrush scandal, almost exclusively impacting Britain's black communities, continues to have a devastating effect, with the government appearing to have taken no serious action to stop the injustice. Richard Sudam, London.
The lineup for Iran's June 18th presidential election is gradually shaping up as more contenders from both ends of the political spectrum are entering the race. On Friday and the fourth day of the registration, hopefuls from both the principalist and the reformist camp showed up at the registration venue.
The U.S. dominance on the world, as Saudi petrodollars, have prevented many countries from standing up to bullying. So we need to strengthen ourselves on the global stage through public diplomacy. We have not worked on this issue.
While on different platforms, Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has underlined that he will not run for president. There are still speculations suggesting that he may change course in the last minute, in which case he would be a top aspirant from the reformist camp.
Outgoing President Hassan Rouhani will hand over the power with some of his tasks unfinished. On top of them is the fate of the nuclear deal and an economy that's facing crippling U.S. sanctions.
The election comes against the backdrop of the Vienna talks between Iran and other parties to the 2015 nuclear deal over ways to revive the ailing accord, after the U.S. cropped the deal in 2018 and reinstated sanctions, before Iran reduced its nuclear obligations in retaliation. Now the outlook for the deal is a key question that's posed to both reformists and principalists.
The nuclear deal is not limited to one specific administration. It was approved by Parliament, the National Security Council, and our leader. So any succeeding government needs to live up to the terms of the deal on the condition that our rights are fulfilled under the accord. If not, there is no reason to do more than our legal responsibility.
The principalists are expected to have a stronger presence in the race. Among the prominent principalist figures who have implied to stand are Judiciary Chief Ebrahim Raisi, former Parliament Speaker Ali Larijani, and Secretary of the Expediency Council Mohsen Rezai. The final list of the contenders will be drawn up on May 27th, after the election vetting body, known as the Constitutional Council, reviews the credentials of the runners. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
After a relatively quiet time on the Lampedusa island, with only a few migrant boat landings per day recorded last year, the number of asylum seekers arriving by sea in Italy has started to pick up again over the past months, to the point that Italian authorities are alarmed by developments in the area. Around 13,000 people seeking asylum have arrived in Lampedusa by sea since the start of 2021, up from about 4,000 in the same period last year.
The real issue here is not the number of migrants arriving in Italy, Malta, Spain and Greece, which is still relatively low compared to previous years, but rather the contribution one expects from all other EU member states in terms of solidarity. Lampedusa doesn't have the health facilities to provide assistance to thousands of migrants in this pandemic crisis.
Over 2,000 migrants landed on the Italian island of Lampedusa between Sunday and Monday. Following the arrivals, the European Union's Home Affairs Commissioner called on member states to show solidarity with Italy and support the relocation of migrants. However, a European Commission spokesperson has said that despite contacts with several member states, no specific pledge has been received so far.
At an ongoing conference organized by the Portuguese duty presidency of the EU in Lisbon, Italian Interior Minister Luciana Lamorgese has called on Brussels to find a long-term structural solution on how to manage asylum seekers. The minister has urged the activation of concrete, solid solidarity mechanisms, as well as a shared strategy to counter the smuggling of human beings and illegal immigration.
This is the other question of Lamorgese said also, humanitarian evacuation from Libya. They have already started, but again, it is dependent on the willingness of states to say, okay, I take 5,000 people from Libya.
According to Italian intelligence sources, there is an estimated 900,000 migrants in Libya kept in appalling living conditions in detention centers where abuse and torture are rife. About 1,000 people trying to reach Europe by sea have been returned to the North African country since the start of May. Max Civili, Rome.
After the Eid al-Fitr prayers, Yemenis came together outside the UN office in Yemen's capital Sana'a to restate the demands of the international community to take real measures against the Saudi blockade on Yemen.
Yemenis celebrate Eid al-Fitr this year amid the continued aggression and blockade, and the sufferings of Yemenis are increasing due to the continued detention of fuel ships by the Saudi-led coalition, which has caused a severe fuel crisis. We regret to see the United Nations and the international community silent towards our suffering.
Protesters slammed Saudi Arabia for its continued detention of oil vessels that has left their country in a desperate struggle to survive amid the harsh shortage of fuel. They said Riyadh has to release their tankers to prove its good intentions for moving towards a political solution.
Piracy acts against Yemeni oil ships are continuing under the leadership of the United States with the participation of the United Nations. We are about to reach the end of the May, and the Saudi coalition has only allowed one ship to enter the country since the beginning of 2021. The United Nations bears full responsibility for the humanitarian situation in Yemen.
Saudi Arabia and its allies imposed an all-out blockade on Yemen since the beginning of the war in March 2015, depriving millions of Yemenis of their basic needs. The United Nations described the situation in the war-torn country as the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Yemenis believe that the United Nations bears responsibility for their suffering as it provides the political cover-up for Riyadh and its allies. They say the international community must break its silence and pressure Saudi Arabia to lift the siege from their country. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Well, and it's the last flower pot. I always change my plant soil in this season. Now, in order to remove the soil and mud from my hands, I have to wash my hands with soap. Oh no, we've run out of soap. These liquid hand washes are really hard to guess if they're finished. I have to buy bar soaps. By the way, did you know that we produce different types of traditional soaps in Iran? One of the most popular types of these traditional soaps is maraghe soap. Tomorrow, we are going to take a trip to maraghe to see how this traditional soap is made. Maraghe is one of the cities of East Azerbaijan province, which is located in east of Urumiye Lake and lies in the shelter of Mount Sahand. The weather in Maraghe is average to cold, so in summer, it's one of the ideal tourist destinations of Iran. One of the oldest souvenirs of Maraghe is its soap. In the past, which there wasn't any chemical soap available, people used maraghe soap for washing. Maraghe soap is mainly made of sheep's tail fat and caustic soda. Maraghe soap is produced in three colors of yellow, white, and black. The compounds of dark soaps include henna and cedar, which have less cleaning effects. am now in Maroghe. I'm going to visit a traditional soap manufacturing workshop. Maroghe soap has still its own fans in different cities of Iran. One of the old fans of this type of soap is my grandma. She never uses any type of soap except the traditional Maroghe soap. I am now in a soap manufacturing workshop in Maroghe. The sheep's tail fat, collected from different cities of Iran, are taken here. The fat is then put in large pots, mixed with certain amount of caustic soda and water. The mixture is cooked twice. Then, the prepared liquid is put in molds. The molds are then taken outdoors to stay in the sunshine for 7 to 10 days. These soaps are kept on wooden shelves for 3 to 6 months until they're dried completely for getting packed and being distributed in the market. Bazaar. I'm going to buy the traditional Maroghe soap for my grandma as a souvenir. It's interesting to know that Maroghe soap can retain for more than 10 years. The older the soap is, the better it cleans. I'm wondering if I could buy some for myself. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com iranmedia.com/en.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, today marks the 73rd anniversary of the Nakba. This is the day of the catastrophe when an entity was created called Israel and hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were thrown off of their land and many were killed. Since May of 1948 until now, Palestinians continue to be under attack by the Israeli regime. And now in 2021, the regime has launched even more aggression against Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied territories. But this time around, the resistance is also launching offensives against the regime. We're going to start this debate off by crossing over to Ramallah and talking to Mona Kandil. Mona, thanks so much for being with us. And of course, you've been with us all day. And now it is the evening and night. Fill us in on what has taken place today overall.
Yes, good evening, Marzia. As you were saying, it's the 73rd anniversary of the Palestinians' catastrophe, their Nakba. Palestinians held rallies across the occupied West Bank to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their home by the Israeli Zionist militias in order to create what's known today as Israel, when an estimated 700,000 Palestinians were forced out from their homes and from their lands. Following the demonstration that took place in Ramallah, Palestinians marched toward the outskirts of the city on the way to the northern entrance of Al Bir city, where the Israeli military checkpoint of Beit El and Beit El settlement and Beit El military checkpoint. Clashes took place between the Palestinian protesters and the Israeli forces, who fired, starting by heavy tear gas and rubber-coated bullets in order to disperse the protesters. We are speaking about 180 Palestinians were wounded today, according to reports by the Palestinian Ministry of Health. 180 Palestinians were wounded, of course, across the occupied West Bank, because other protests took place all around the occupied West Bank. Palestinians, of course, today also took part in the funeral processions of a number of Palestinians were killed by the Israeli forces yesterday, Friday. These protests had taken a place in the occupied West Bank to denounce Israel's massacres and airstrikes against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Thank you so much for that update from Ramallah. And now I'd like to welcome my other guests to this debate. Journalist and documentary filmmaker Yusuf Al-Halu out of London and editor of NewFrontierUSA.org. Angela John Gage out of New Jersey. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in London. And Yusuf, now, Israel has been blatant with its attacks as usual, whether we're talking about raiding the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the month of Ramadan are stealing more Palestinian homes in Sheikh Jarrah, or its massive attacks on Gaza, the regime acts with impunity. Why is that the case? I mean, is it just because they really believe that they can get away with it, or actually they just don't care?
It's all of that, Mardia. It's because Israel knows it will not be held accountable for its atrocities that is ongoing, the ethnic cleansing that started in 1948, the evicting of those 50 Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in Jerusalem, the attacks against peaceful Muslim worshippers. It was the turning point. I call it a turning point because of the awakening that it sent shockwaves across the region, across the world, to say that, look, Palestinians have been under Israeli military occupation, under oppression for decades, and the world is allowing this to happen. And clearly it's because of the blind American support, the U.S. administrations, whether it's Obama, Biden, Trump, they are all the same, different faces for the same currency. Gaza has been under bombardment for the sixth consecutive day. 140 Palestinians have been killed, including some 40 children. Massive destruction was caused. Entire buildings, high-rise buildings, were destroyed during live on air. Media offices were attacked. The world is watching. It's a double standard policy. It's a hypocrisy. It's an international conspiracy of silence. They consider Palestinian blood cheap. They blame always on the Palestinian side. The Western media always portrays the Palestinians as the victimizers. The first thing they ask you, why rockets are fired from Gaza. They don't ask you what's the cause of the latest escalation in Gaza. They consider Palestinians as subhumans, unfortunately. But despite all this biased stance, we see the huge solidarity demonstrations across the globe, whether it's in Europe or elsewhere. Okay. People are awakening. So there is mass mobilization on part of the nations, and now it's up to the governments of the so-called international community, the so-called democratic countries, to act, intervene, and put pressure on Israel to stop its genocide, ethnic cleansing, and to act as a country under international law, not above the international law.
All right, I turn to New Jersey. Let me get Angelo in on this conversation. Now, there have been massive protests, as Yusuf just alluded to, around the world condemning Israel, and videos of the atrocities that the regime is committing in Gaza shared widely on social media. Do you see this as a transition? Do you think that more and more people not only are becoming aware, but have a sense of responsibility to do something this time around?
Yes, I do believe more and more people are becoming aware, which is why we're seeing internet censorship of all sorts of activists across the world. I myself included in those hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are deeply disturbed about the actions that Israel takes. It is genocide, as Yusuf said. It's been going on for nearly seven decades, and they always try to blame the Palestinians for it. Oh, these rockets are coming for all there because they're evil. Why did this all start? Well, it's because of Nakba. And the people of the world are watching Israel. And all the excuses that the U.S., my country, is making for them, people are no longer buying. In fact, there are several, Rashid Tlaib was saying something very passionate about it. They're asking people to at least hold Israel accountable to human rights, to the Geneva Conventions, to do something. And so this pressure on Israel will continue to grow. I hope it does continue to grow. I'm glad people around the world are unified together for the Palestinian people, because this is nothing short of a genocide. We are seeing children being killed, civilians. Israelis are saying that, oh, we got them to get into the tunnels, yet they're still bombing high rises and taking out the media, blowing up children, entire families, with no repercussions because of the undying, unbreakable bond that my country has with the Israelis, who have harmed my country as well with the USS Liberty, Jonathan Pollard, and all the other things that they have done to us. So I do see a trend of people waking up across the world. I am happy to see that, but I do not want to see anyone else dying until people wake up. I want them to wake up now and to take action now, because now is the time to make this change.
Well, Yusuf, speaking of change, there seems to be a change this time around with the Palestinian situation, in that the resistance itself is making the Israelis pay a price this time around for their aggression. Your take on that?
Well, yes, the Israelis were taken by surprise that the capabilities of the Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza are much, much stronger than the 2014, the last unallowed aggression on Gaza. They are surprised because they asked themselves this question. And a small organization under siege for the past 13 years, how on earth it managed to improve its capabilities and advance its training, tactics and strategies, and how it was able to reach areas such as Tel Aviv or Ben Gurion Airport or even areas inside the Green Line. So they know that whenever they attack Gaza, they leave Gaza, they destroy Gaza, and then after some years they will come attack Gaza because they know they will not achieve victory. Because everybody is united now behind the resistance because they don't differentiate between a Hamas fighter or a civilian. The vast majority of those who were maimed and killed are civilians. If you see the footage of those children torn to pieces and those who were pulled from under the rubble, the tons of bombs that were dropped on Gaza, pounding Gaza day and night, relentless airstrikes, tank shelling, warships attacking. It was like an action movie. 2 million people have been experiencing terror and tear and fear. Let's call it. It's people of Gaza have been terrorized by Israel's weapons and advanced technologies. Although they know that these civilians' areas, they justify this by telling you it was rockets fired from within these civilian areas. They intentionally, as everybody agrees, they attack these targets so that they inflict heavy damage so that the Palestinians revolt against the resistance and accuse it. But I can tell you, it's the opposite is happening. Everyone is united behind the resistance because Israel, as I said, they attack everybody. I mean, the destruction.
Let me just jump in here, Yusuf, what you've just said. Everyone is united behind the resistance, that side of things, because the Palestinians in general, the people, along with the various resistance groups, seem to be one this time around. Do you agree with that analysis? And if so, what has happened? What brought on this change?
Well, they've been always united, the resistance groups. They formed a joint chamber of
with
command.
With the people, too.
Yeah. I mean, if Israel is doing its best to disconnect Palestinians between Gaza, the West Bank in 1948, the Arab world. But whenever Israel attacks Gaza in this lethal manner, disproportionate force, the destruction and the killing and the horror, people are showing sympathy with their fellow citizens, whether they are in the West Bank or inside historic Palestine, because they cannot just sit idle and watch without any intervening. Even the Palestinian Authority stance, which is obviously, it's much better than previous years. The Palestinian president said Israel crossed or red lines. He said Jerusalem is a red line. He's allowing demonstrations to be staged across the occupied West Bank. So they are united because this time it's different. And it's different because Israel is attacking a holy site. It's attacking Jerusalem, Al-Quds. It's evicting. This round of escalation, it was not between Hamas ruled Gaza and Israel. No, it was initiated because of Israel's attacks on Al-Quds, on Jerusalem Al-Quds, and Al-Quds unites all Palestinians.
Okay, well, Angelo, in Paris now, the French government, because we've seen a lot of demonstrations across the world now, in Paris, the French government deemed the pro-Palestinian protests as illegal and initiated a heavy crackdown on protesters in the French capital. I mean, what exactly does this mean when Israel can commit atrocities and nothing is being said officially, but when the French people want to protest against these crimes, the French government labels their act as illegal?
Well, it just shows you who really runs the French government. It's no different than my country. America is run by basically AIPAC and other Zionist organizations and lobbies. So it's no surprise to me that the West sits back and allows this to happen to these people in Gaza and Palestine and do nothing about it. And again, as Yusuf said, a lot of empty words, a lot of empty promises and condolences and all these things, but that doesn't change anything. We need to see action. We need to see solidarity. We need to see some sanctions at least. I mean, imagine if the United States said, we're going to have to sanction you for that. but they'll never do it. So we need to really pressure Israel with sanctions and other ways to punish them for their behavior, because right now they have a blank check to do whatever they want. They're very confident that they can kill civilians disproportionately with no response whatsoever from any other country. That's why they do it. They have no fear of loss. But as Yusuf said, the Palestinians actually broke through their Iron Dome, and now there's something that they have to worry about. And I condemn all violence on all sides, of course, because I don't want to see any innocent civilians killed. However, the Israelis simply don't care about innocent civilians. It would be different if they were targeting militants only, but they just kill everyone. It's a collective punishment, and it's been going on for decades. And that's why people are starting to back the Palestinians from all over the world. And it disgusts me that the French government wants to make this illegal for the French people who have some kind of decency to say something. To make that an illegal protest is absolutely insane, and shows you who runs the French government.
Hmm. Well, Yusuf, if what is happening in Gaza was to happen in New York or London or Paris, I mean, what type of reaction would we see? And we've seen Israel target residential areas, even high-rise buildings, and kill many kids and others in this very densely populated area. I just want to talk about that side of things, the difference. What is it? Is it that a Palestinian life in these Western eyes or less, or your assessment of it all?
Yes, unfortunately, this is the norm. If this happened to Israelis, the whole world would have intervened. If Palestinians attack a Jewish synagogue in Jerusalem, the whole world would have condemned it. But when a holy site, Al-Aqsa Mosque, was violated, attacked, you know, over and over and over again. The world is not reacting. It's because it doesn't belong to what's called the Jewish state. I mean, Israel is trying to portray itself as a Jewish state. Israel is trying to grab more land, and they say the land is too small to be shared. That's why Netanyahu keeps saying that he will never allow the establishment of Palestinian state. So obviously, Palestinian blood is cheap, and I can't understand the psychology behind a human being who is enjoying and sitting on top hills and say to the Israeli occupation forces, pound Gaza, and they chant slogans, death to Arab, whereas they don't even know that there are some Jews Arabs. So there is something wrong with the psychology, with the mentality here.
Well, let's look at that. I want to cross over because I don't have that much time back with Angelo. Yusuf said there's something with the psychology there. I want to talk about the psychology beyond that area, again, back to these various Western governments, because I talked earlier about Paris and not allowing the demonstration to take place, pro-Palestinian demonstration. There's Austria that's flying Israeli flags in its office buildings in support of what Israel is doing. London and of course, Washington. It's just quiet. And then, of course, we have Germany that has also sided with the Israeli regime. So it's one thing what Yusuf was saying inside of Israel, and unfortunately, their disconnect with reality. But how do you assess these Western governments? Why is this the case? Why isn't a Palestinian life of value? Or should I say, why is an Israeli life of so much value, it appears even more than their own nationals?
Oh, yes, it's insane to know that's the truth when it comes to this. Because, first of all, the Zionist regime has infiltrated all media in the West, and they're always telling people Israel's our greatest ally, and this goes for every one of these Western countries. And they have also made the communities in the Middle East seem like they're always the bad guys, whether it comes to Gaddafi, Saddam, the Palestinians, the Syrians. They have demonized Muslims in general as well. So you see here that we have to stop the Muslims, and they did 9/11 and all this other stuff like that, and that gives this nonchalant disregard for their lives. And Israel's our only democracy. It's our only ally in the Middle East. We have to protect them. They're the only ones like us, when in reality, they're the complete opposite of us. They don't even share the same value of life at all. And also, the idea of the Palestinians' life being less than other people's lives comes from the extremists in Israel, the Zionists, who are the Talmudic Zionists, like Rabbi Osef Yavaria, who basically said that a Gentile life is like cattle. And this kind of spreads throughout the West when you demonize Muslims and Palestinians and other people. So when these rockets are flown, oh, it's those evil Muslims going at it. Meanwhile, there's Christians in Palestine. So the West is ignorant because the Zionists have much influence in Western media, and this trickles down into the governments, and the governments repeat these mantras that Israel's our greatest ally, we must support them no matter what, at the expense of their own people. Like Nancy Pelosi has said, if anything, even if our country crumbles, my country, United States, we will always support Israel. It's insane that these are our representatives, and this is all over the West, so I am not surprised that these people do not value Palestinian lives when they should absolutely value them.
Well, Yusuf, we've seen Muslims in neighboring countries of Palestine express their solidarity, even countries such as Jordan, and we witness people going to the border, and of course Lebanon in the same way. And there seems to be a growing awareness, especially in these neighboring countries, and showing strong solidarity with their Palestinian brothers. I want to talk about the significance of that on the Israeli psyche, that they know that the Palestinians really are not alone.
Indeed, it was unprecedented to see thousands or hundreds of thousands of Jordanians or Lebanese reaching, marching toward the border, and even trying to infiltrate the border. And it was a standoff. Israeli soldiers were carrying Israeli flags, trying to provoke those Jordanians, who mostly Palestinians, who were kicked out from their homes back in 1948. This was also kind of something new. We never witnessed such a scenery, that those people dare and manage, and they infiltrated the border to show solidarity with their Palestinian brothers and sisters. It was something new. It raises our morale, the Palestinians' morale. They know that they are not alone anymore in this aggression. There is no equal sides in this. I wouldn't say it's conflict, it's an attack against people. So when these people in neighboring countries, Egyptians, whatever is their nationality, of course they will react. It's an awakening. And the Israelis are worried from this, because they have been trying hard to disconnect Palestinians from the original existence. And they have been trying their best in order to disconnect and dislink those Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank from their Palestinians inside the green light. So what's happening is something we haven't witnessed before. And I can tell you something, Mardia, that whatever Israel does, Palestinians will never raise the white flag. They will continue to resist. They will keep rising from the ashes until their lands are liberated. And Israel has been pinning its hope on the new generations because an Israeli prime minister at the time, Golda Meir, she said this phrase that the old will die and the young will forget. But it's not happening. The young are remembering. We teach the love of our homeland to our children. And those young people who rely nowadays on social media, they are not afraid anymore. You can see these Palestinian youth in Jerusalem. They front and face Israeli soldiers, okay. Whatever their means available. So the conflict will not be resolved until Palestinian rights are regained.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this debate. Journalist and documentary filmmaker Yusuf Al-Hadou out of London, editor of NewFrontierUSA.org, Angela John Gage out of New Jersey. And as always, appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off of myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.